Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, mother! Do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
Now, is my shit together.
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, I'm hoping Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Al. Ricardo on the board. S&P futures up 6. NASDAQ futures up 28. Do we have the Professor Carl with us?
You do indeed.
He unmuted himself. I love it when he unmutes himself.
Well, you know, you don't want to hear me doing all kinds of scratchy around things until I unmute myself. So.
Your pooch barking. You do have a pooch, right?
I do not have a pooch. I have a cat. My daughter has a cat who is here sometimes when she's traveling. And she has a pooch. But the pooch is very, very well behaved. In fact, the amount of effort that she's put into that is exceptional. So, I mean, it doesn't come without an awful lot of effort.
No, also, if you have an older one who's behaved, generally the younger one will become behaved pretty quick too.
Yeah, she's only got the one, but Lila is something else. She loves to run, which is really kind of cool, and she spent her growing up years outdoors for the most part because Sarah likes to travel a lot, and as a result, if I put running shorts on and stuff and get ready to, if she's here, yeah, let's go.
There you go.
Yeah. She'll pace me, which is, I mean, that's quite a thing. She doesn't care about distance. She's like, let's do it, you know. But that's what you get when you raise a dog that is not only expected to behave, but is out there doing 15, 20-mile hikes with you all the time.
Well, then you get some people who, when it's 95, realize dogs can't sweat and they're idiots running with them. So
that's stupid. That's stupid. That's how you kill a dog.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, no. So, how did you like that insanity fest over the last couple of days that we've had from both sides of the aisle, including that thing last night with Musk?
Oh, I was just reading about it. I would rather watch the Cubs and they lost too. So I got to give myself a break for a little bit.
I listened to most of it. Once I was able to get in, which did take a little while.
That's what I was just reading about. Now they're blaming a CAC, but I don't know about that.
Well, you know, I don't know if that's true or not. But I will say that when the problem went away, it went away awfully fast and didn't come back, even though from the point that I got into where I finally bailed on it and just said, you know, all right, I've had enough of this. I'm not learning anything. The online user count had more than doubled, so... there very well may have been an actual attempt to prevent a campaign event.
Well, they ended up cutting the amount of people. So I think that's what sort of fixed it, according to CNBC here.
No, they didn't do that. No, that's a lie.
All right.
That's a complete lie. I got in, there were about 500,000 or 600,000 people that were listening on the spaces, and... But by the time they actually started to get into things, you know, the elevator music goes away and there's actual conversation going on. It was well over a million. So, but CNBC lies about everything, so does everybody else. Harris, by the way, their campaign released a statement basically slamming Musk for doing it as a, you know, demanding equal time. Well, Musk, here's the amusing part of that. Musk actually offered it to Harris, and Harris told him to go pound sand. So, she seems to think she can run a campaign out of her basement.
All right, so what is, from somebody who's somewhat familiar with this, being on the radio and so forth,
yep.
What does Musk actually think he is these days, other than out of reach of any kind of law or rule?
Well, that's a good question. It's, you know, there's... we could get into the Section 230 thing, which is something that I think I can speak to with some degree of authority, seeing as I was in the industry when that was debated and passed. Okay, and so, I mean, you know, my time in the industry goes back to when Clinton was in office, which was when all that stuff was going on. All right, and Section 230 is bad law. But its exemption from being treated under the common carriage rules in the general sense, which is the salient point of it, okay, is supposed to come with some affirmative obligations, and one of them is not shutting people up. Now, people like to claim, Musk loves to claim, that he, you know, freed the bird when he bought Twitter, right? That he took the censorship reins off and this and that and everything. Well, that's a lie. That's a bald-faced lie.
If he does it, it's not censorship. It's just what he wants to do. Oh. Everybody defines everything else as, you know.
But on the other hand, Facebook declaring that my email address, I left there, shut my account down, told him to delete it, better than 10 years ago. Recently, I decided, well, you know, I'd like to look at stuff in Marketplace, which is, you know, Craigslist has kind of disappeared as a useful thing. Marketplace has kind of, you know, taken it over.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Okay.
Yep. And so, you know, all right, fine. So I'm like, all right, I'll go on there and, you know, set up a new profile under my same email address that I've had since 1999. All right. Definitely mine, my domain. I own it. And after going through their sign-up procedure, whatever, it comes back and says, you're not authentic. You're not real. You're not really Carl Denninger.
Well, there you go. I bet you didn't know that.
Well, so I said, well, you know, I'm appealing that, right? So I clicked the box to do that. Well, that's BS. I most certainly am. And about a day later or so, it comes back and says, your appeal has been denied. There is no appeal of this. Tough luck. Bye. Have a nice day. This account cannot be used. It's locked permanently. Go F yourself, basically. Now, that is a false statement. It's defamatory. You're telling me that I don't exist? Well, of course I do. Does Facebook have the right to tell me to go screw goats, that they don't want me on their system for whatever the true reason is? Well, I suppose they do.
Well, it depends on who or what they are, and this is what.
Well, exactly. Yeah. But this is the question, Chief. Is what is Facebook? Okay, what are these different sites? And depending on what they are, depends on what they can do. If they hold themselves out as a public square,
they are the figment of the imagination of people with enormous egos that feel that no rules should apply to them.
Well, yeah, and you know what? It's the problem is that most of the game playing that they do, in one form or another, in a sane society, would be considered felony.
Well, just to bring the listeners up to speed before Carl and I drive everybody in a rat hole here. Obviously, Stocks and Jacks is no longer on the air. So hopefully, we'll be soon or one of these days. As a podcast, I guess I can do whatever I damn well please, as long as it's not defamatory to anybody. But if I'm on the air, because I was on the air a real long time, Stacks and Jacks was, I will get these notices from the station, things that do not do, especially anywhere near election. I don't know what the dates are, Carl, necessarily,
yep.
But there's I won't call them blackout periods, but there's periods of something.
Well, they kind of are blackout periods.
Well, that's right, but it's not really a blackout. In other words, when I had Karen Reeves on, and I had Keith, tell us his last name, the Orland mayor. I'll think of it in a second. Peacock. I can do that, all right. But now, if I was still on the score or still on the other stations we were on, they would say absolutely no, because the other person gets a right. Matter of fact, in Karen Reeves' case, she was running against 10 other people. All 10
oh
of those
God.
People. Yeah, all 10. Yeah, it was a primary. So, well, not that they wanted to, but if I was still on the score, every one of them, would want to be on the score for
you
free.
Nine more people.
So you have to be real careful. Plus, you can't. It's one of the reasons why they never break. They used to tell Jan and I when we were in a score that they couldn't sell our advertising, which is total BS, right? And they would give it away. Well, they never really gave it away. But they want to keep everybody else's number, the list price, ridiculously high. Because if a politician wants to advertise, you have to give them the lowest rate you charge anybody anytime during the day, and they can get it whatever they want.
Yep.
So in other words, if Musk is, if he's a media company, but he wants to be his own place, if he gives Trump essentially 2 hours on his station, he has to give Kamala Harris the same sort of interview. But get a load of this. You can pick any time you want. So if I'm on the score from 3 to 4 in the morning, well, there's still people listening to the score. I mean, it's a big station. They can demand time at, like, drive time.
Right.
Or the advertisement that's now, you know, $50 instead of $200. They can demand it at drive time, and you got to give it to them. I don't know if they can.
Yeah.
I'm going to demand the exact time, but now these guys, they don't want anything to do with that. I'm not so sure that Harris wants to be grilled by him for 2 hours, but if it was another station, she'd just say, "You got to give me two free hours on Twitter, or X, or the hell it is."
Yeah, exactly. This is one of the things that's, you know. So I mean, the social media thing is. The problem I have with all of this is that we have now discovered, you know, this Gabby thing has been disbanded, right? Because Musk sued him under antitrust law. The real question is, and this is where, you know, we go back to one of the themes that I bring up on the show a lot, which is that there's, when it comes to the laws that really have teeth, which are the ones where you can go to jail, they can't just take your money, they can take your freedom away. There is no private right of action, and therefore this inevitably becomes politicized. It always has to some extent, but it's gotten much worse in the last 20 or 30 years.
We also have a justice system. I'm just going to say this real quick. I don't want to wander off this direction. You have a justice system where you got a guy whose company exists to give him money. I mean, not the shareholders, not the cars, not anything. It's to give him money. Billions and billions of dollars go to one guy. And so at the end of the day, he can say, you know, and Carl, you know, kind of, I will say, swashbuckling said they can sue you. Okay, well, that's, in this world, in our Justice Department, if a guy like Musk, or like Trump used to like to do, sues you, I'm going to say that if Carl and I go get a decent attorney, the guy wants $100,000 up front.
Right, and so basically they can
That's a down payment, you know.
Right, that's right.
And this justice system does not work for anybody like us. So the idea that those people don't, when they just say blithely, they'll sue you, and everybody goes, so what? It's a big so what.
Oh, no. I mean, when I ran MCS, we had a very well-known firm on retainer in Chicago. Because, you know, every now and then we actually needed legal work. I mean, it's part of running a company. But... you know, it was not there were plenty of times that I, you know, was like, hey, what this guy did, you know, I ought to sue him, right? And then you call a guy up that's your contact over there, and you go, you know, what would it take for me to actually go after this blankety blank blank blank? And they're like, well, you know, stroke us up a check for 50, and and you think about it, you go, do I really want to do that? You know.
Well, you know, it's if you were to look at.
By the way, that's the start. That's not what's going to cost you.
By the way, you're leading me into something, and you have a sixth sense about you to know right where I'm going and stuff. It's like, can you see my machine here? I'm just asking. Anyway, there's an article here by Jessica Dickler. How's that for a name? Jessica Dickler, D-I-C-K-L-E-R. But before I get into it. You know, once in a while, with tongue-in-cheek, I say there used to be a guy, you know, who must be dead by now, used to chart the costs of essentially high-priced and low and high-class and low-class hookers as a way to see how the different groups of society were actually doing. And the last time I read the guy's report was several years ago, and he was talking about how high-class hookers are off the chart in terms of price. Low-class hookers basically can't even find somebody because nobody's got any money. But, you know, There's an article here she writes. This is obviously, she must. I don't want to say anything bad about anybody. I'm going to say that she went to a very incredible school. Always takes an Uber or something. Here's the article. 59% of Americans wrongly think the U.S. is in a recession, report finds.
Oh, you mean all the ones that don't have any money?
Yeah. It says here, citing higher costs and difficulty making ends meet, 3 in 5 Americans falsely believe that the U.S. is currently in a recession, according to a recent report. Well, let me help you, Jessica. Not personally, I'm not bitching at you. If 3 out of 5 Americans are in a recession, are in one, meaning last year's not as good or last quarter's not as good. Guess what? Whatever. Economists have wrestled with the growing disconnect between how well the economy is doing and how people feel about their financial standing. Maybe the economists are the ones that are disconnected. I'm just saying. Some say we're in a vibe session. Now, what the hell is that? People are just... So let me get this straight. If you pour money into the economy, increase the prices, lie about the consumer price index to where it looks like you're doing good, when everybody out there, not everybody, say, I'll use her number, 3 in 5 Americans are worse off than they were a quarter ago, that's not... maybe we should redefine this recession, or maybe somebody already did redefine it in a way where we'll never be in a recession in their mind.
Well, you can't use that word because it's politically damaging because, you know, of course, nobody ever wants to take credit for the recession, right?
Right.
but I found, there were some things that I found fascinating last night, and I wasn't drinking through this. Maybe I should have been when Musk and Trump were doing this thing. But there were two... We, as I've brought up many times, the biggest, probably the biggest prediction I made when he ran the first time in 2016, that ended up being 100% accurate, and the reason that I refused to support and vote for him in 2016, was that he had 3 planks in his platform on actually solving the medical mess. All 3 of which, if he'd done them, would have, it wouldn't have been 100% fixed, but it would have made a huge difference. All right, and one of them was essentially the essence of one of my proposals, which is everyone has to pay the same price. Doesn't matter how you pay, but because a procedure is a procedure is a procedure, a drug is a drug is a drug, and by the way, antitrust law, when you get down into it, when you get down into physical things, it's not true for services, but it is for goods. Any good that travels in interstate transport. Robinson Patman says buyers of like kind and quantity cannot be charged different prices. Okay, this law has been on the books for a long time.
Yeah, but it's been forgotten.
Well, it's a law that I shoved up suppliers' backsides a couple of times when I was running MCS successfully, and so including some very big names everybody would recognize, because I knew that law existed, I knew what it said, and I was not about to let one of my competitors get an advantage buying the same sort of kind and quantity of things that I needed in my business. No, you gave him that price, and guess what? You're giving it to me. Like it or not, or you're going to get sued.
You know who used that law? Sorry to interrupt. There's a pizza place on 95th Street. It does a real big business. And for a while, they were giving away a free bottle of wine with a family-sized pizza.
Oh, God.
And in the Binnie's Beverage Depot was outraged and, like, sued the guy or made a big complaint.
These are laws.
Yeah.
Okay? They're not suggestions. They're laws. And so, but, you know, this was one of the, there were 3 planks in his platform on this as he came into the election in 2016. And on election night, as I was sitting in Pensacola in a bar, watching returns come in with some libertarian friends of mine, we had a couple of candidates that were on the libertarian ticket, not at the high level, but you know, we had some guys on the state tickets. We had a congressional race that we were involved in. So I mean, there was reason for me to be hanging out with these dudes because I was part of that group. And as I'm watching the returns come in, and they call, you know, they've gotten them up. We basically had taken over the bar. We got them to let us essentially have it because there were, you know, about 40 of us in there. And so we had the big screen TV that, you know, usually has football games on at their election returns. And at the moment they called the race for Trump, at that very moment, I hit F5 on my computer refresh, and all three of those planks disappeared off his campaign website. And they were never seen again. And at that point, I was like, son of a bitch, I was right. And of course, I made, you know, I made a lot of noise about this. And then the other interesting thing was that during the transition period, before he took office, there were some people that I knew pretty well in D.C. that were trying to get me an audience with him to talk about these particular aspects of things. You know, I didn't have a lot of hope, but supposedly they had some, you know, some time scheduled that I could at least have a conversation with a not just by myself, with a few other people related to this sort of stuff. And it got postponed twice and then disappeared off the calendar and never happened. And I said, look, I'll get my car, I'll drive up there. Just tell me when and where, I'll show up, no big deal. Nope, never happened. Now, that's less attention than I managed to get out of some Senate staffers, about 7 or 8 years earlier. So, yeah, the thing that I thought was fascinating last night was that there wasn't a word about any of this. There was, you know, we're not going to have a recession. We're going to have a great economy. By the way, we're going to throw out all the illegals. Okay, that's a nice idea. Now tell me how you're going to do it. The only way you're ever going to make it happen, but there was something he could have said that would have actually perked my ears up and made me pay attention and say, okay, maybe there's something to this. All he had to say was, I'm going to take 8 U.S.C. 1324, and anybody that has violated that law is going to prison.
Well, the CNBC gave a rough thing here about him. And again, being in the middle, I'm appalled by the campaigns of both people, to be honest with you.
So oh, yeah, far, no, I mean, I, yeah.
Because you listen to the stuff, and I mean, basically, either one will throw a baby off a bridge for a boat, but the CNBC said some stuff here, some objective stuff. They claim he absolutely has not changed his tune. He's still running against Biden, and yet he's not. They said his staff is trying to get him to focus on Harris and the future and what he's going to do, and he absolutely refuses to do it. So they said last night, all he did was talk about his friendship with Putin. He mentioned Biden's name like 24 times and Harris 11, when he's not running against Biden.
You know what? I don't know where they got some of this from, because I didn't hear anything related to, you know.
They're saying it's all the same. And, you know, I'm my significant other is a Trumper, and whenever I get over her place, you know, he's on. She tapes some of these rallies, right? She likes listening to him.
Right.
And that's, you know, I mean, a lot of people do. It's not like it's, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Okay. Whatever.
Whatever.
Yeah.
And but I'm struck by. I don't even care where he is. It's the same story. It's the exact same load of BS. You know, what did he do here, and what did Biden, you know, what did this guy do, and what a good job he did against North Korea, and how he and Putin can cut a deal. And I mean, it's like listening to, you know, whatever. It's like it's going to the same Barnum and Bailey circus every night or something.
Oh no, Chief, I'm not. Yeah, I mean, one of the biggest, you know, as I commented to a couple of friends of mine not too long ago, I said, the man's going to lose. He's going to lose because he hasn't made a single substantive policy position that, you know, that actually, I mean, it's nothing other than, you guys all oppressed me, you tried to throw me in jail, you know, blankety blank you. You know, by the way, Biden's ruined the country, and vote for me.
Yeah.
All right. And my answer to that is, okay, look, last time I checked, you didn't do anything about the gain-of-function research that was going on over in China. You came into office. You had 3.5 years to stomp on the little midget mouse at the NIH. You didn't do it. A terrible virus got out of the labs over there.
Which we still have never admitted to, by the way.
Which we've never admitted to, but our government was funding the work, okay?
Yeah.
So spare me the, it was all the Chinese's fault, because it was our fault and that we were paying for it. By the way, there was a technology transfer back into a couple of United States universities, which is absolute documentary proof that we were involved in it.
How did didn't want to go down this road because I wanted.
So anyway, let me ask you a question.
How did I read something? I want to talk more about what we talked about the other day because I thought it was fascinating. More I think about our conversations after we have them, Carl, they get even more fascinating to me. Anyway, how did this, whatever they wanted to do, the gain of function, I don't know exactly as much about that as you do, but evidently the NSA, wasn't the first appeal for money to the NSA? And the NSA said, we're not, it's too dangerous, we're not doing it.
It was to DARPA. And that proposal is in fact public and has been released, and I've read it.
Right, DARPA.
DARPA is the defense. That's the Defense Department.
Okay,
they're the research guys. They're the guys that gave you the internet.
Okay, those are the guys. That's, I thought it was the NSA. It was DARPA. All right, fair enough.
No, it's DARPA, but okay. DARPA turned it down.
Right,
and their rejection letter is in fact also public.
But it said it was too damn dangerous, right?
Well, not only did they say it was too damn dangerous, it said where you want to be playing around with this stuff is on another country's land. And by the way, the citizens haven't given consent to being experimented on, which you're inevitably going to be doing because if this thing gets out, it's going to screw them.
Yep.
All right. So, yeah, I mean, there was I've seen a lot of grant proposals that basically get a go away young boy, you know, kind of response, right? This is one of the... I don't think I've ever read a rejection letter that was worded this kind of a way.
I mean, how does somebody not, you know, my mother's cousin's wife in Columbus, she's a teacher, and one day her class was so unruly she wore a T-shirt that said, "What part of no don't you get?"
Yeah. Well, pretty clearly what they did was they just, you know, it's like, okay, well, we got told no here, let's go try somewhere else.
How did the university, we'll spend just another minute on this because it is fair. How did they select, matter of fact, we got to dash here as soon as Joel gets on, how did they select the University of North Carolina? How did they get involved in this?
So there's a lot of these universities, you know, have a biologics research component, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, right? I mean, figuring out how things work in bodies is probably, you know, living things is probably a good thing in the general sense. But there's a lot of dangerous stuff you can do playing around with that. You know, I mean, if you want to, get the living blankety blank scared out of you, watch I Am Legend sometime. People think that kind of thing's impossible. No, it's not.
All right. Well, all right. We have to maybe continue. But my question, and I know you're going to get to it, but if I'm wearing this letter from DARPA saying absolutely not, how do I walk in the University of North Carolina and said, "Hey, how about I run this through you guys?" Even though these guys say no, I mean, who the hell would say yes?
People that have been doing this stuff in this general area for a long period of time, and they don't take no for an answer. They find a way to get the research funding and do it anyway.
I can't imagine it's
corrupt as you know what, and it goes on all the time.
Did they benefit by it?
Oh yeah. Remember, in academia, you either publish stuff or you die, funding wise.
On Friday we'll have stuff to talk about. But one of the things that we tore up and down Friday, and the more I thought about it, is we were arguing essentially over the economic displacement of some of the fixes you and I are proposing.
Right.
And that's an interesting topic. I'm going to run it by Russell tomorrow, or Hal today and Russell tomorrow, and we'll kick it around on Friday. If I hear you in 15 minutes, it's because Kenny didn't call in, but hopefully Kenny will be calling in today. I guess he's doing pretty good, and we love to hear him. Not that I don't love to hear you, but Kenny's a good guy. Anyway... if I don't hear from you in 15 minutes, I'll hear from you on Friday, and we'll... Because that is an amazing... You know what that is? That was my final from Milton Friedman, basically.
Well,
all the way from start to finish.
All I can tell you is that the only time that we've ever left things alone and let them run was in 1920-21, and the results were... They speak for themselves, they were, without question, the best... I mean, I'm not saying people aren't going to scream, because of course they will... But if you look at it objectively, you analyze, you know, the amount of damage and the amount of time for recovery and the ultimate outcome when you get done with all of it, the only correct action is nothing.
deny, 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 and then deny again.
No, 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 and no.
Yeah. S&P futures up 9, NASDAQ futures up 52. We're a little running late, Ricardo. Let's go real quick break and then get to Joel.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Good morning.
Give us a call about your stock. 888-76-JACKS. That's 888-765-6257. Or email us stocksandjocks@live.com.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ricardo on the board. Real quick, S&P futures up 10. NASDAQ futures up 58. Today, the PPI comes out. This month, the PPI comes out today. CPI tomorrow. I don't know how they alternate on that, but somehow or another, this month, the PPI is coming up first. But let's just go real quick here. Euro. Slightly down, I'm going to say just very slightly, almost unchanged. Asia, Nikkei's up 1,200 points, 3.4%, 36,232. The Hang Seng up 62.3%, Shanghai up 9.3%, so we got rallies over there. Yesterday, S&P was up 23 cents, NASDAQ up 35 bucks, so it was a very inside day, very boring. Bonds unchanged, 3.90, nothing going on there. We've got oil, which had a big rally yesterday because of essentially war drums in the Middle East. Hanging in there at 79.90, only down 16 cents. We've got gold, which had a big run up yesterday. The 2504 is up 20 cents, so it's hanging up there. Silver was really up yesterday. It's down 19 cents today. So, we had war issues going on yesterday. And the FX, here, Euro's still 109. The British pound still 127. Japanese yen 147. We'll do more of that at 7:30 when we do the PPI number. Ricardo, we have for us traffic, weather, sports.
Morning, Chiefs. 6:36 a.m. here in Chicago. 63 degrees right now with a high of 81 degrees. Partly sunny and very pleasant today. Tonight will be mainly clear with a low of 69 degrees. On to Phoenix, Arizona, 91 degrees right now with a high of 107. Partly sunny and very warm. Tonight will be mainly clear with a low of 87 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe, 15 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lake Cook, 32 minutes. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 29 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 17 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 25 minutes. Lastly, sports, MLB. Yesterday, the Cubs lost to the Guardians 8-9, but the White Sox beat the Yankees 2-2, which is nice to see after their very sad record. Diamondbacks beat the Rockies 5-4, and today we got back-to-back games. Cubs play the Guardians at 5:40 p.m., White Sox play the Yankees at 7:10 p.m., and Diamondbacks play the Rockies at 8:40 p.m. Back over to you, Chief.
Do we have Joel?
You do, Chief. Good morning.
Good morning. Is it pretty much universal most places in the world that whenever the Yankees lose, it's a good day?
Unless you're a Yankees fan.
Yeah, well, I like to see Yankees.
Man, they're loaded. Did you see the year Aaron Judge is having?
Oh, yeah. But he hasn't been hurt. Well, he was out a couple weeks early in the year, wasn't he?
Yeah. I mean, just impressive numbers. I mean, they look tough. The Orioles look good. The Dodgers probably have the best starting rotation. Long ways to go. I mean, Seattle potentially can make the playoffs. They don't have the best record. But Yankees, Orioles, the Mets are on the outside looking in. It could be an interesting baseball season.
What do you make of the Guardians with the low payroll?
It can be done, you know. It can be done until it's undone, right?
Yeah.
The Motor City Kitties laid an egg, so not too happy about that. But it's so funny. You're talking about the Yankees, and I have a cousin and his son. They are driving back from California, and they're hitting all the ballparks, and they're going to hit a game. They're coming back from California. They're going to hit a Minnesota game. Then they're going to go to Chicago, catch a White Sox game. Go back up to Milwaukee, catch a Brewers game, come back, catch a Cubs game. That night, drive to the Motor City, stay with me on that Saturday, go to a Yankees-Detroit game, leave that game, go to Pittsburgh, go to a Pittsburgh game, leave there, and go to a Philly game.
Pittsburgh, I love that park. I was there. Have you ever been there?
Never been there.
It's real nice. I mean, it's an old-style
Three
park.
Rivers?
No, the new one. They actually have, they're the only one left that has, the upper deck has an overhang over the downstairs, so the upper deck's closer. Remember when Upper Decks used to have an overhang instead of begin when the old...
You know what? I could count the ballparks I've been to, just on one hand. Detroit, both of the Chicago venues. And I don't know. I might have went to an Astros game. I don't think so. I think
the... Well, in the Astro Dome?
Chief, now, how long do you want to be on with me? I have been in the Astrodome. I was at the last Astro Blue Bonnet Bowl.
Really?
When Michigan beat UCLA. And actually, in that time period, this was back in 82-83, Michigan played UCLA three times within 14 months.
Wow.
They had a home and home, and then they played them in the Blue Bonnet Bowl.
That's unreal.
But I just want to know, have you unwound the rest of your Yen carry trade?
Oh, God. It is such a... so amazing to me as a trader on the floor. Whenever you leave a leg of a spread dangling, which is really what that is, I'm going to try and be as brief as I can here, because foreign currency, obviously, most people have no idea what that looks like. If you... I'll make it simple. If the interest rates in the U.S. are 5%, the interest rates in Japan are 1%, and you, in order to borrow in Japan, you have to borrow in yen. Okay, so you borrow $100 worth of yen, say whatever it is, you borrow 150 yen, and you turn it into dollars, and you bring the dollar over here, and you put it in the bank, and you make 5% instead of the one over there. Well, it sounds like a zero-sum game, but the problem is, you now owe the people in Japan in yen. So if you were to say, I'm going to complete this trade and I'm going to buy a forward contract a year from now to get my yen back, okay, the premium you have to pay is going to be 4%. Because there's nothing easy. Nobody's going to give you that back for the same price you got it today. You're going to have to pay a 4% premium, because inside the forward trade is the interest rate differential. So what you do is you forget about that. You just say, I'm going to make the 4% more over here. And oh, by the way, at the end of the year, the yen versus dollar value is still going to be the same. Well, that's interesting. But they got away with it for, what, a decade or two, maybe?
But
all of a sudden, one day, you don't get away with it.
You know what, though? The thing that has exacerbated this trade is they weren't at the time, and for the longest time, they weren't going into interest-bearing U.S. investments, because a lot of them were very low. They were going into tech stocks.
Oh, yeah. Well,
why do you want to make 5% when you can make 20, 30, 40, 50%? If you look at if you overlay a triple Q chart over when the yen turned, the triple Qs peaked on the exact same day that the yen turned around.
I get what I'm saying. I was trying to be simple with my explanation.
I'm sorry.
But it really was the cause of the mortgage crisis.
Yep.
But the thing of it is, Joel, if you and I, say you open up the piggy bank and you come up with $1 million, and I can find a guy over in Japan to loan us $50 million on your million, now we're making a 4% differential and $51 million or $50 million, yours were not. But mortgages are, they're constant. They're 30 years. We can't screw that up, or we didn't think we could, where we might actually buy a stock that goes down. So I'm going to say we're going to be happy with the 5% on the $50 million that isn't even ours. And that's what caused the mortgage, one of the reasons that the mortgage crisis. It wasn't necessarily giving a loan to Joe who didn't deserve it. That would be one thing. There were 35 hours of leverage on every dollar of mortgages. Anyway, but that's what happens is, but if you complete the transaction, there's no money there, right? You're essentially taking a leg on the yen trade.
It's easily executed until it's not, until you have to unwind. So, big data numbers this week.
Yep.
We'll see. I mean, the whole world's convinced we're going a half, three quarters emergency rate cut, if you listen to Jeremy Siegel. So you are seeing some weakness today. You see the Home Depot trading in the red, so some weakness with the consumer. Right now, they're kind of buying the dip as they always doing it. So We'll see. And, you know, why they do the PPI today, CPI tomorrow, I suppose, don't ask me unless they're trying to play some tricks on us. But, boy, interesting couple months, Chief, coming up, and it'll be fun to follow with you interest rate looming and what's going on in November? A little something going on in November. So a lot of interesting things that are going to definitely have a major impact on the markets.
Well, it's going to be fun for this is a middle political statement. It's going to be fun listening to essentially the two worst presidencies in my lifetime argue over who was better for 5 months.
There's a lot of things we don't talk politics that much, but we can definitely agree on that one, there, Chief.
I mean, as to who's better, I have no idea. I mean, whatever. S&P futures up 10. Joel,
right,
thank
go
you.
Blue.
Joel up. S&P up 10. NASDAQ was up 62. Do we have Mr. Kenny?
Yes, we do.
We do.
Hey, buddy, how are you?
I'm better. How are you?
You know what? You have no idea how happy I am to see you here or to listen to you today.
Yeah, me too. I guess
no kidding. I mean, yeah, I gotta believe you feel the same way about that. Maybe even more so.
Yeah.
So, how you doing? All right. So, what's going on? I see you're doing your letter. You're doing the video. As soon as I saw that, I said, "Hey, he must be doing better." So, I'll roust him. So, consider yourself rousted.
Yeah, No, I'm feeling better. Not 100% yet, but you know, I'm getting there. But it's all good. You know, trying to get back into the swing of things.
Are you in Florida or Boston?
No, I'm in Florida.
Okay.
I was in Boston in July, but I'm back in Florida now.
What do you make all this? I mean, start wherever you want.
So I think it's all very interesting. First of all, I couldn't get on Elon Musk's thing last night because I got blocked just because it would, you know, they had that issue. So I missed it. I'm just getting bits and pieces of it this morning. But, you know, look, after what happened last week, we needed a catalyst to do something to shake the little bit because, you know, they were stretched. They were very much, I think, overvalued. And whatever it was going to be some catalyst to create it. Now, that Japanese carry trade, you know, was maybe a little bit more than what anyone thought was going to happen. But actually, quite honestly, in retrospect, it was probably good, right? It shook the markets a little bit. It caused some nervousness and some angst among the weak hands. And they fell out. And the good names rally right back. And I suspect that we're going to continue to see this churning trend, because in that activity on Monday, there was a lot of internal damage done to the markets because, you know, it traded down so dramatically right through the trend lines and right through support lines that it needs some time to repair itself. And because of that, it's going to continue to whiplash a little bit and slowly fade. But I also think, remember, we're in a very seasonally weak time of year. August through October tends to be a weak time of year anyway. Never mind this year, we got a presidential election, which is only going to add more chaos to it. And we've got, you know, an erupting war in the Middle East that potentially is going to add more chaos to it, at least in the short term. But, you know, investors shouldn't necessarily be so worried. I do think the path of least resistance is down just because of the seasonality of it. But I think the market basically is okay. I think there've been a lot of opportunities created, and certainly some of the great names that, you know, big asset managers use as ATMs, Apple, Amazon, JP Morgan. Those are big mega cap companies that when it gets nervous and big asset managers need to raise money quick, they can raise money quick in those names. Much easier than selling Bank of Hawaii that trades 100,000 shares a day versus Apple that trades, you know, 15 million shares a day. It's much easier to raise capital and raise money in those big mega cap names. But as a result of that, it does create long-term opportunities, because what really happened? Did Apple's story really change? Did the fundamentals really change? No, but they knocked the stock down 15%. Just because there was some nervousness and they needed some quick cash. So I think Apple's a screaming buy. Microsoft is still down. They knocked that down 18%. It's only rallied back 4% so far. I think that's a screaming buy. But the other names, you know, they took Apple right back up. They took Nvidia right back up. That was off 30%. Nvidia last Wednesday, it was down 30% from its most recent high. They've rallied that back nicely. They've done the same to a whole bunch of them. Microsoft, I think, is lagging a little bit, which I think still creates an opportunity. JP Morgan, they did it there. They did it at Bank of America. Those are all big mega cap names that aren't going anywhere, and I think created long-term opportunity.
Well, I think in theory, I'm 100% with you. And somehow or another, I'm just very concerned about If I were to drag you out of a stick you in a cave for 6 months and pull you out and say in the last 5 days we've had 2% and 3% moves in the market, does that Kenny, does that mean a healthy market or not? I'm going to guess you'd say it's not, even if it's to the upside.
Right.
The problem I have with these big mega cap names is people, the numbers were winging around here. I mean, NVIDIA under 100, which it ducked there for a second, and now it's back to 110. That's a $240 billion swing in market cap.
Correct.
I mean, Kenny, as much as 5 years ago, you and I have been around forever. We can't even conceive of that kind of money flying, value moving in a week.
No, I agreed. But I think that, you know, you and I talk about this all the time. It is the advance of technology that also allows those kinds of swings to happen. And then you get these big mega cap names that are all very sexy and they're crowded and everyone's in the NVIDIA trade. The minute it hits the fan, you know, they all run for the door. The asset managers take advantage. The algos take advantage, and it causes, you know, causes
there's panic. Nobody there. There's nobody there. You know that.
Exactly right.
But I mean, just for a second, I'm certainly not a good technical guy like you are. And I try and be somewhat of a fundamental guy, but that's, you can't trade on that because you could think a stock's overvalued. It might be, but it might be 5 years before you make a dime, right?
Right.
I mean, I think the only reason why, if you didn't even know the name of the company and just looked at all the numbers, and even with the growth they've had, which is pretty spectacular, if you looked at NVIDIA, the only reason why it's $111 is people think it's worth that is because it was there last week. If that stock was trading 90 and never was 111, you wouldn't sit there and say, man, this thing needs to be 20 bucks higher. I mean Microsoft is probably the most highest value company that's as old and as big as them I've ever seen in my life. They're like
right.
They're like 12 times revenue or something. How does it kind of, we're not talking about PE, we're talking about how does Microsoft double? I mean, just look at these numbers, and I'm amazed by them. Maybe that's the term. I can't believe they're that big. But I mean, if all of a sudden you and I were taken to the moon for 6 months and came back, and I gave you all the Microsoft numbers and I told you it was trading, let's say 330 instead of 408, I don't think the brilliant Kenny Pulcheri would sit there and go, man, this thing ought to be more 408. You'd say 320 doesn't look bad. I mean, it looks good. Looks fine. Am I right or wrong?
No, you are. But I think some of the mindset has changed too. And I think the whole AI reality is going to continue to change the market. And NVIDIA sits right at the nexus of the whole AI world, which is why I think it continues to not only be a crowded trade, but one that's very volatile. Right?
Why?
Go ahead.
The AI stuff, and Carl tries to educate me on this stuff, and he and Kevin think it's just a further evolving of stuff we've been evolving with for 40 years. I mean, it's just the next generation. But why? There always has to be something. I mean, how many times we run the market up on the cloud? And how many? And 10 years ago, how much? If you didn't say China on CNBC every other word, they wouldn't let you in. and now nobody wants to.
Isn't that true?
I mean, you know what I want to? You haven't been out in a while, so I got 100 questions. One of the questions I have for you, and this is we've had some buildings here in Chicago go for this has nothing to do with real estate, because I know real estate in Chicago is not your shtick, but go for like 20 cents on the buck.
Yeah.
Russell comes in and he talks about, because Russell's, nobody can really figure out who's got what where, but he's kind of our expert on China. He's been there a million times. He goes, a lot of these guys aren't paying any of these real estate interest stuff. There's all kinds of American money that kind of went over there. The guy's CalPERS is one of them. Now, have our people just gotten so big and they're so well diversified that this is just, pimple on the butt of an elephant? Or are we hiding some stuff that, who the hell takes a $100 million hit on a building, one building in downtown Chicago, and doesn't leave a mark? It's got to leave a mark someplace. Where is all this happening? I mean, who are these people?
Yeah, who's eating it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's good. That's an interesting. I don't know how to answer that question because real estate is not, I'm not in that industry specifically, but I guess we're going to see more of it, right? If the economy, in fact, turns more negative, which I'm not so sure it's going to, but if it does, we'll certainly see more of that, and then you'll start to see where it's coming from and then how it ultimately impacts. But I will tell you this, I am friends, you know, my wife works at a big real estate investment hedge fund. They are building funds to take advantage of this supposed coming disaster, right? BlackRock is, Kayne Anderson is, there's a whole bunch of them that are building, that are raising money for funds to take advantage of the weakness that they see coming. And maybe that's already started coming, you know, like in that example that you just cited, right? Certainly there are examples of that in New York City. I haven't seen any of those examples, though, like down here in Florida. There's probably a demand on more space down here in Florida just because there's so much movement, right, out of those big cities down to places like here, Texas, and, you know, other cities that are seeing increases in population.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're in New York. Well, you were Boston guy, but you were in New York. The place, you know, the building they were talking about 2 weeks ago, the one that used to have Sports Illustrated on 50th Street?
See
that story went from $8.5 million in auction?
No.
It's a 27-story building on 50th Street.
Oh, I did not see that. When did that happen, last month?
2 weeks? 3 weeks?
Evidently,
Sports Illustrated used to be. And of course, the guy, my buddies are having a cocktail with. They go, it's in Harlem. I go, I don't think Sports Illustrated was ever in Harlem. They thought it was on 150th Street. No, it was on 50th Street. 50th Street's Midtown, 50th. Right?
Yeah. 50th Street smack in Midtown. Yeah, that's smack in Midtown.
So it's a 27-story building.
It might have been on the west side of the... I don't know where it was on 50th Street, but I think it was right smack in the center of Manhattan.
Well, that's a little cheap, eh?
Yeah, that's exactly cheap.
If we'd have known, you could have written a check. I'd have run over with it.
Yeah, but you know what's amazing to me? Because when we look at the real estate, the commercial real estate market, like in places like New York City, is imploding, yet housing real estate, residential real estate in Manhattan apparently continues to explode, especially the high-end real estate market is just exploding in Manhattan, which is amazing to me. It really is amazing to me because not only is it expensive to live there, but you're paying these exorbitant prices, you're paying exorbitant taxes, not only real estate taxes, but state taxes and city taxes. It's just crazy to me that it is as hot a market as it is. But I guess that also tells you that there's a certain sector of people that just have so much money that they need a place to put it. And Manhattan real estate in the upper end is just going bananas.
Well, yeah, you're absolutely spot on. It's like this. And Audrey's, real estate is busy. But you know the weird part of it, Kenny? It's not. Well, I'm not gonna say people like you and me, but it's not people that are earning a bunch of dough. Two good jobs. It's they're getting their first mortgage. And Nancy was on yesterday talking about that. It's everybody who got caught up, luckily, in this kind of wealth bubble. It's somebody who bought a house for $150 and now they're selling it for $375, which is beyond their wildest dreams, and they're buying a place for $400. It's all virtually everybody's a cash buyer from what they just had. It's just like the lady who was I keep using her as an example, the Wynn daughter. Mm-hmm. The Las Vegas Sands daughter.
Yep.
She cashed out that stuff because she got the stock from the old man and didn't have to pay taxes on it and bought, she bought like $3 billion or $2 billion worth of Mark Cuban's team. Well, there's no way that lady made that money. It's not like she was an attorney that worked her whole life and had $3 billion in the bank. It's this massive, kick up in wealth brought upon by the money that was poured into the system. There's like two societies here.
Yeah, no, there's definitely two societies. And I think, quite honestly, I think if we have another 4 years of what we have, it's going to continue to get worse, quite honestly.
What did you think of this article here? I don't know if you were on earlier this, where the hell I got it here someplace. It was a, the lady's name was interesting, Jessica Dickler. I don't know if you want to go through that life with that
Jessica
name.
Jessica what?
Dickler, D-I-C-K-L-E-R. And it was about, and she was outraged because people wrongly think, is it 59% of the society wrongly thinks we're in a recession because they're not doing so good. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, if that percentage of your population is not doing so good, meaning they're in personal recessions, maybe we are in a recession. How do you define it?
Right.
I mean,
I don't know. I don't know.
I think I thought I had it here. Oh, well, I must have sent it out instead, but Yeah, I mean, they're saying 3 out of 5 people think that they're not doing as well as they were last year. Well, I guess they're in a recession, aren't they?
Yeah, if they're not. Yeah, if that's what they think, then they're in a recession. Correct. And I think there's a lot. And I think there's a lot of those people, quite honestly, that feel like they're not doing as well as they were last year, and that prices continue to go higher, and they're just barely keeping up.
So what the next? If you had a guess, boy, I can't even. Other than maybe being fun to trade, do you think this is going to have any commodity type of thing? I mean, I don't ever traded a currency in my life, but boy, I kind of wish I was involved in this yen. Have you seen this thing's moving around like there's no tomorrow? I mean, when have you seen a currency of that magnitude, you know, not the Mexican peso, move 3% in a day? I don't think I've ever seen it.
Yeah, no, and I haven't. And currencies, you know, it's very interesting because I saw that overnight. But I've never traded the currency markets. I do find them fascinating, although that was never my exposure. So you probably need someone else that's got much more experience in currencies than I do.
Well, I don't know I'm certainly not asking you where you think it's going to go, because I sure as hell don't know. And I don't know, but I don't know what 3% moves in a currency and in a market. That are becoming sort of. I mean, we're seeing. I mean, you're watching stuff all day. I know. How do you this Nasdaq futures? It'll be up 60 and it'll be down 100. That's 160 points in literally 5 minutes. And I'm looking at every TV. Yeah, I'm looking at everything. I can't find. Is there like some back channel memos flying around? That's a real number. I mean, we're not talking about 10 or 20 points.
No, you're not talking about 10 or 20 points. But again. I think it's a situation that the central banks have put us in, right? They kept central bank policy, monetary policy so abnormal for so many years. I think this is part of what happens. This is one of those unexpected results, right? Unexpected circumstances that, as a result of what they did, is now the market's trying to find its way, and we have these massive moves in currencies, we have these massive moves in commodities, we have these massive moves in stocks. As a result, as the market tries, I think, to rebalance, although I don't think we're anywhere near complete yet rebalancing. I think there's still more to go. Look, we spent 15 or 16 years with zero interest rates. It's not going to be over in 2 or 3 years. It's probably going to take just as long to rebalance as it did to as long as we left them in those, you know, at those levels that we left them that were abnormal.
Kenny, do you think there's a way out for the Fed on this? I mean, we have this massive price bubble that's gagging a huge chunk of your population. Other people seem to like it, and
can't we inflate our way out of it? Isn't that the problem, that ultimately we could inflate our way out of this problem? And that's going to be very painful. It's going to be very much like it was when we had that really deep high inflation in the late 70s, early 80s, right? Well, but that went on for 2.5 years.
That inflation somehow was a lot easier to deal with because the interest rates for people that had regular money went up too. I mean, here you've devalued the dollar to such. I mean, if somebody had, you know, if you had a, you know, you probably got a conservative uncle someplace that didn't want to be in the stock market. He might have been 80 years old. And he had his money in the bank. Well, his $1 million is now worth 600. I'm sorry, it is.
Yeah.
I mean, that's we've never done that to our population before. I mean, because my mom, when the interest rates were 13, she was getting 14 at the bank.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, this time we just took it away from people.
Yeah.
That's what they were.
Rates were nearly 20%. And,
yeah.
You know, you could put money in a CD and earn 20% guaranteed sleep at night, no risk. Do you remember that?
Yeah, well, you got the inflation rate plus.
Right, correct.
And now you didn't. So the difference between a renter and an owner, the gap has never been bigger in 5 years than it is now.
Yeah.
And it's imminent. And I don't know how you the only solution, and we the country has done this before. It's essentially what happened in 2000. You remember? They were pushing the money into the system. Then they really kicked it in for Y2K. Remember that? In the stock market,
yeah.
In the stock market that was already pretty high with the dot-bomb stuff. Went even higher, and that was essentially the peak. Was in early 2000, right, somewhere in there,
right.
which was the Fed money. But then, the Fed said, "Oh, by the way, we poured all this money in. We better take it out." And then when he started taking it out, all of a sudden things went the other way. Well, now they are so happy with the bubble that they don't want to take it out.
No, right. They don't want to take it out.
They're saying if we take it out, I think that the Fed now, their two minor things are inflation and employment. Their number one thing is to maintain this wealth bubble, because an awful lot of people, an awful lot of political power don't want to see NVIDIA at 60.
No, correct. And if they take it out, it's going to be way too painful, and then they're going to have some explaining to do to the upper crust, apparently, right? Into the whole party system. They don't want to put themselves in that position. So I honestly think we're stuck in this bubble until somebody says, it's got to stop. Sorry, guys, party's over. But that's not going to happen.
Well, Kenny, it is so refreshing to hear you, bud. I missed you, and hopefully next week. Without going into politics, I got to believe Powell does not want to see Trump back in there again. What did he say last night, that the Fed shouldn't be able to raise rates without running it by him? His direct quote was, "I made a lot of money. I know more about this than the Fed does," or something along those lines.
Yeah, no, and you see, and I got to tell you something. Don't even get me started, but this is where Trump can't keep his mouth shut, right?
Right.
He just can't keep his mouth shut. And quite honestly, if you want my opinion, I think he's blown it. I really think he's blown it. I hate to say it, but I think we're looking at a Harris-Waltz presidency. That's what I think we're looking at.
Is there any chance for a Polkari presidency?
2028, I'm getting ready.
I gotta decide who I'm voting for, you or Lou or Hal or Russell. It's not going to be me. It'll be one of you guys. I could be one of your economic advisors. I'll let you guys do all the hard work. Anyway, take care of yourself. But SP Futures up 20, NASDAQ Futures up 99. Do we want to go to a quick break? We want to go right to Professor.
Whatever you want, man.
Professor, you with us?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Doing all right. You know, just solving the problems of the world is getting harder. Just saying, you know.
Well, you know, to me, it's pretty simple. I think the Fed is not going anywhere. There's too many PhD economists that need those jobs, and they're very well-paying jobs. So I don't think the Fed's going anywhere, and I think all you have to do is just, instead of Trump dictating what the Fed should do, I think he should have said, well, I'm going to pass a law that says the Fed has to grow M2 at the rate of population growth, and that's the only mandate to give it. That's what he could have said instead of what he did say, right?
Well, except for the fact that the reason why they go off the rails one way or the other is because the president tells them to.
Yeah.
You're hamstringing yourself.
Yeah, I think we have to go to a law where all they do is watch M2 growth. That's it. They just watch M2 growth. I think that would do the least amount of damage. I mean, we're seeing the damage. We're not even at the cusp. I don't think we've even got to the beginning of this whole thing. I think this stuff's going to unravel. If the Fed tries to lower interest rates, I think the inflation is going to take off again. You know, when you make credit really inexpensive, you create a moral hazard. Things that wouldn't have been financed, things that are unproductive, things that don't make a profit, they can get financed when interest rates are artificially low. And you don't see that malinvestment until the interest rates come back up. And then all of a sudden, those assets are underwater. Those investments are underwater. So I think the Fed can't lower interest rates. I think the Fed keeps interest rates where they are. I think you're gonna have this massive slowdown in the economy. And I used to think the monetary policy and the fiscal policy of the Bush-Obama, you know, the year of transition from Bush to Obama and that TARP nonsense and the Fed printing money back then and, you know, Congress moving up interest on reserves and the Fed using it as a price floor for the federal funds rate, buying all those mortgage-backed securities up. I used to think that was historic.
Yeah, well,
man, you compare that to this, that's not historic. This is historic. We're living through historic times.
Well, it's the motivation, and it's not just, you can't just blame these creatures. Motivation goes back to Rome, for God's sake, or probably Greece. I mean, it is as strict as you think you would like to be regarding this issue. I'm going to say that I've gotten to know you a little bit. This Hal Snard dude is actually a pretty good guy and doesn't like to see people messed up. right?
Oh, I hate it, man. You
but
know,
I'm gonna say if in a closet behind the Oval Office, somebody came in and gave you some sob story about somebody stole their car and lightning hit their house, they didn't have insurance, blah blah blah, and you were to say, how much do you need? And they say $5,000, and you could walk in the back room and turn the crank 50 times or whatever you need to get hundos. How many hundos would you need? You'd need 50 hundos. And give them 50 of them. You'd say, you know, I know someday that's going to come into the society, into the market, and there's going to be 0.1% inflation someplace, but I don't care. These people need the help. And, you know, maybe it won't even happen. You're going to hand it to them. And that's exactly what these guys are doing to everybody else. I mean, you, on every level of government. I mean, in Illinois yesterday, Pritzker came out with all these grants, right? And it's, you know, every one of them, if you listen to them, sort of makes sense. There's nothing really wrong with it, except, well, I guess there is something wrong with it. I wouldn't be saying that. One of them was for tourist attractions on Route 66, the old Route 66. Another one was we're researching, I don't know, some kind of water or some kind of something going, what the corn farmers can do with their corn if we go to electric cars and nobody needs ethanol anymore. And I'm thinking, somehow or another, as much as you'd like to be this benefactor to people with other people's money, there's people, the taxes who just went up into some of the areas in the South Side, and I'm saying they're sending bills out to people that absolutely cannot pay that bill. I mean, there's no way on earth that you can pay that bill and close to not paying it. And yet the money's going to go for corn growers, because now you're the benefactor and you're the guy. It's somewhat human nature, and you can pass, I guess, all the laws you want, and people will just find a way around it, because that's what you do. You grab money from this person, you get your face on TV, and you magnanimously give it to somebody else and who happens to vote for you or support you. I mean, somehow this game, there has to be some common sense or logic or some limits to the game. I mean, I don't know how you get there. I mean, I guess I'm saying the same thing you are, but in a different way.
Well, the problem with this whole game is, I think the people that end up making those decisions aren't the brightest people in the tool shed. They aren't the sharpest tools, right?
Right.
And so I think the scariest politician is one who thinks they're smart, but is quite the opposite. I think they're the most dangerous. And the best way to help the average person in the United States, honestly, it's not sellable. The best way to do it is to get them out of their cage. They're right now, they're that dog that was my neighbor's dog, chained up in a 8x8 chain link fence cage in the backyard, where the owner, the benevolent owner, brings the dog's food and water every day at the same time. That's what our government has turned into.
Yeah.
The benevolent, I wouldn't call them benevolent, but maybe in their eyes, they're benevolent. They're giving us our food. They're giving us our dog dish every day. It's got dog food in the afternoon, got water during the day. And we're dependent on this stuff. And the best solution is to open the cage and let that dog figure it out for himself. That's honestly the best cure. You can take that acorn and you can plant it in a pot with perfect soil conditions, perfect water, perfect humidity, perfect temperature, perfect sunlight, and that tree will only get so big. You gotta grab that tree and throw it in the backyard and let it figure it out. The potential for growth is 100 times more if you just throw the thing in the backyard. But there's risk, right? There's risk. And I think that's what made America great. That's why these Europeans that are being treated like little babies, they can't listen to Trump and Elon. Their ears might be hurt by their conversation last night.
Yeah, it's a...
That's why these Europeans escaped Europe. That's why they're willing to ride in a wooden boat with hemp sails.
Well, I've got some guys
here
that...
Get away from that nonsense.
Some of the guys here that one of the guys, he got another job because the place went under where he was working, but he's, I think he, I'm not positive he was. His parents are from Poland, I know, and he knows the language. He's very in the Polish community here. He, you know, he loves it. He goes to the church and the whole bit, and he speaks fluent Polish. And he's a big time. Well, he's a sailor, and he's a programmer for like securities firms. Real nice kid. Real kid. He's a kid to me. He's 30-ish, and he was telling me one night. He goes, you know, I know some people here that are getting so weirded out by what America has become. It's not really why they left Poland. He goes, I have two or three friends that went back to do 2 years at the Polish university and doing 2 years here. He goes, they've never come back. They said it's nicer over here now.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes kind of more sense. But, you know, my uncle, who was a real character, you'd love talking to him. He worked at Western Electric, and he loved to play the horses. But he was one of these guys that was an absolute voracious reader. I'm sure he didn't even graduate high school. But if you asked him any subject, any author, he knew right away who the person was and what they, you know. He was one of those kind of...
Well, you know, Tom, that kind of person is the person I like talking to, because they learn for learning's sake.
Yeah.
And some of the best economists I've ever met are the guys that just read... everything. They read everything on the Austrian style. They read the monetary stuff. They read the Keynesian stuff. They had no degree, but man, I'll tell you, they were really good economists.
But he also owned a bar at one point, so he knew human nature. He goes, and Richard J. Daley was the mayor, not Richard M., the old man. And he goes, Chicago is being run very well. The level of corruption is at a very low level, and it actually works for people. He didn't say there was none, because where human beings are involved, there's always something, right? I mean, so everybody always knows a guy who knows a guy. What's the Chicago line? Ricardo, like this one. Don't send me nobody that nobody sent. Right? And have you ever heard that one before?
Never heard that before.
if nobody sent him, I don't want to see him. But, you know, the corruption in those days was, if you were willing to be a precinct captain, the alderman would get Uncle Hal a job as a garbage guy or a bridge tender or something along those. But it still was a job that you had to show up. I mean, you got, but it wasn't like you just gave him dough. He actually had to show up and do something, right? And especially if somebody got you the job, you better show up or it's egg on your face, right? So
yeah, I think today you get that kind of job, you don't have to do anything.
Yeah, or you do something. I don't know, become a community organizer. There's no, I don't even know what the job is, but
or you refer to your customers as their appointment time.
Yeah.
Yesterday, my name was 11:10. Sorry, 11:50.
But I mean that kind of corruption, to me, isn't even really corruption. It's you know, and the guys. This is interesting. I don't know if I told you this before. Some of the dudes. I mean, George Stigler, who ended up becoming a Nobel Prize winner. He was a behavioral / governmental economist. That's what they do in that Charles L. Walgreen, endowed professorship. It is now has had three Nobel Prize winners out of the same endowed professorship. And he said, you know, we were talking the other night over a cocktail. He sounded like me, or I sound like him. He said, I think that three of us agreed that if you actually did a deep study of which was better, the patronage system or the civil service system, I'm going to say the patronage system probably was more efficient. And I was stunned when he said that.
Well, you know, that's not, I don't think that's too far off, because I think under that system, you know, if you're not doing your job, they're going to get rid of you.
Yeah, there's nothing that says you can't fire Uncle Hal if he doesn't show up.
Yeah, I mean, if he doesn't show up and do the work, you're going to get another cousin to do the work, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's...
Under this current system, I don't know why federal employees needed a union. I think it's probably impossible to them to be terminated. I mean, they have to really... I think it's probably harder to terminate a federal employee than it is a tenured professor.
Well, the theory of that, I mean, I think you'll agree with me on this, maybe not. Fire away. But let's say Pullman had a union. When I first started working there, I was on strike. I went to get my interview, and I had to cross a picket line. Guess we get a load of this. I had to cross a picket line in my suit, driving a Fiat. This was not good, Hal.
Dude, you should have been. You should have rented a Dodge pickup or something.
Oh, I know, I know. I should have been. And I, so I didn't know they were on strike. So I pull up.
You know, that's kind of like driving a Lincoln Town Car on the California Berkeley campus.
Yeah. It's so these guys surround the car. Hey, where are you going? I got. Hey guys, I mean, I appreciate what you're doing. Here's my letter. Here's my interview. And they go, all right, this guy's okay. I'm sitting there going, how did I get myself in this mess? But they did not like the car. What the hell is this thing anyway? This little Fiat 128. I don't know how the hell we ended up owning that thing, but
I had a Triumph Spider for about 4 months, and the head gasket kept blowing. So that's probably one reason why I joined the Navy.
You got it. So, but I mean, my point is, when you have a union at Pullman or the steelworkers, you're essentially, the company is, quote, running. Now, whether it's running good or bad or whatever, who the hell knows, but it's running, and people inside the place are essentially fighting over a piece of the pie.
Yep.
And yeah, that's really the deal. And with no, but it's an arm's length transaction between the work, well, it isn't to be. You got the Pinkertons out shooting people, but normally it's somewhat of an arm's length transaction between this side and that side. But I think what Roosevelt thought about public unions, if you vote the guy in and support the guy, I mean, the current mayor of Chicago, after working for the teachers union for however many years, and who knows if he's still under salary there, I hope he isn't, they worked the polling places for him. And now their contract's coming up. Well, I don't think, I mean, he needs to recuse himself, but he won't.
Yeah,
I mean, how is that an arm's length transaction?
Yeah,
I mean, it's not like the union saying to the chairman of the place, "Hey, if you don't give us our contract, we're voting you out." They don't get a vote, right?
Yeah,
I mean, the dynamic is totally different, and I'm going to say it's wrong, you know. Yeah. So, anywho, what do you make? I mean, I'm going to ask everybody this week. Kyle brought up some interesting stuff last Friday, and we were, you know, of course, I always like to argue with Kyle, but when it was all over, I'm sitting there going, what were we really arguing about? And what came down to, it's always been, well, not always, but certainly since, and maybe this is what I need you for, to tell me if it's the idea that you pick up some efficiency somewhere, okay? And the theory, I think, has always been that if it takes, you know, 15 people to turn a flywheel, and you know, and you're paying for them, and all of a sudden you get a motor that does it or a steam engine, and now you let's say you get rid of the 15 people, all right, but now your costs go down so much that the product in any kind of competitive world, which maybe we don't have anymore, that the price of the product goes down, all right. So people who need the product now are going to have little extra money in their pocket. And they're going to be able to spend it somewhere else. And, oh, by the way, it might be something new, might be whatever, that those 15 people, after some period of time, I mean, not tomorrow or next week, are going to find a spot and we'll all be better off, is the theory, correct?
Yeah, they're going to, a new industry will
yeah,
we can't even imagine.
But at the end of the day, now the question is, how long does that take? Is there some sort of a safety net for the people who used to turn the flywheel? And is there some kind of re-education or retraining to where everybody makes out the end of this deal? I mean, and Carl, well, no, Carl, let me finish real quick, and then I'll stop talking. He said if we all of a sudden, I mean, he rags constantly about the medical industry, and so do you, and so do I. And it came down to is if all of a sudden, let's say the fat drug that they charge $1,000 for, and there was an article in the paper, I didn't do this, an article in CNBC, that actually at 5 hours they can make money on it. And so I'm going to say his claim was, I'm not doing it exactly right, but if all of a sudden somebody were to fix it tomorrow, and all these people in that industry, all the people that are sitting on top of the doctors at Northwestern University and Rush and University of Chicago and God knows where else, if they all got basically their wages cut by 50% or they got bleep canned tomorrow, that it would cause such a recession. And I'm sitting there going, I don't know. The person who used to pay $1,000 for the drug that now pays $100 or $50 has $900 more in their pocket. I think that $900 goes somewhere else pretty damn quick. I mean, granted, it'll take a while for the person who got canned to get from that maybe too highly paid job in the health industry somewhere else, and he may never get the $1 million he maybe was never worth in the first place. But I think it would be a massive benefit for everybody, wouldn't you? I guess the question is, how long would that take, Hal? How much of a revolution or revolt would it be in the economy in the meantime? Would there be so many people out of work that we had this huge recession would take? I don't know that it would or wouldn't. I don't know. That's what I'm asking.
Well, the problem lies in the way the system's set up right now. You have a patent which grants monopoly power to a company, and the politician's solution is to cap prices. Well, that's not the right thing to do. So, I mean, currently the problem is you have these monopolies, government-created monopolies. Now, if doctors and union workers want to form unions, that's their business. But the problem I have with it is that they seek government protection for their association, their union, whatever you want to call it. And I think that's criminal. So that's the problem, right? And I think that has created a situation where I think medical services are probably 10 times more than they would be had we had a market system. So the government has really, really skewed the price setting mechanisms in these industries.
I think
really
the patents on drugs are the worst part, but yeah.
And this isn't exactly what I was talking about. The analogy I was making with that caged dog, right? That dog is caged up. Government has caged that dog up, provided with all kinds of luxuries. The dog is nice and fat. It's like Puss in Boots in that Shrek Forever After, the fourth version of Shrek, the fourth sequel of Shrek. Puss in Boots is all fatted up with the milk and whatnot. That's the medical industry. Now, if you take away those protections, right, all of a sudden, you know, Fiona's not giving Puss in Boots that nice milk and brushing her hair. They got to kind of fend for themselves, and it's going to be brutal. But I think when they discover the world outside the cage that they live in, when they get outside that cage and they discover their true passions and whatnot, I think their lives, they're going to be crummy as soon as that gate is open, as soon as that cage door is open. I think their lives are going to be crummy, but when they get outside and they can smell the fresh air, they get beyond these protective chains of government, I think they're going to have a much more rewarding life.
What is the interim, I guess, is what we were...
Well, it's pain. It's pain for the people because their salaries, the salaries that are making, the prices that they're charging, they are only possible because of the restraints the federal government places on their industry. They have so protected these industries from competition.
Well, I guess
imagine what the world would be like without those restraints.
I think I can because I'm old enough to remember when before they were there.
I prefer being an economics professor, not an R1 university. I don't even want tenure. I want to be held. I'm really weird, Tom. I want to be held accountable every time I walk into a classroom. If I don't provide quality, entertaining, educational, economic instructions, I'm not going to have a job. And that right there, that being held accountable every time I walk into the classroom is what I want, is what I need. It's why my views, my economics have evolved. If I was tenured and I was enjoying the tenure at an R1 university, if I had done that from the get-go, I would be this unhappy, narrowly thinking expert in the small, tiny corner of welfare reform economics. And my life would not be very fun. My job would not be fun. I would not be having fun. I'd be making a lot of money.
Yeah, but what makes you
and
think
I'd have
that,
a lot more job security, but I would not be enjoying my life. So well, I enjoy being set free from the cage.
I love arguing with you. I think George Stigler was I love listening to the guy. He brought the same passion to class every day as you do, and he was tenured.
Yeah.
I think it's a matter of personality, not how you get paid.
But when you're protected to the degree that a lot of these guys are protected to, I'm not trying to generalize here. I'm just saying, for me personally, when you're protected to that level, you can be a little more lazy in your thinking. You can be a little more lazy in your reasoning. You have this aura of expert in this one narrow area, right? And what you don't get to observe is the world that would exist in the absence of those protections. In absence of those protections, you have to be a little more careful.
Well, I guess
I'd have, you know, hanging out with Carl on a college campus that I typically work on, I couldn't do it. I mean, I can have conversations with him, you know, like on Twitter, but he does say some pretty outrageous stuff. I couldn't, you know, have those kinds of conversations on a college campus, because on a college campus, silence is compliance.
Oh yeah.
Right. So, although I love Carl and I love hearing his perspective, man, he really says it like he means it, right? He does not mince words. He uses, you know, creative language that I as a person, a libertarian on a very progressive campus, on very progressive campuses, I can't do that kind of thing. I had to find a different way to express myself.
Well, sure, right? As you know, is the moderator here.
And I love Carl. I'm not.
Well, I'm just saying.
I actually admire the fact that he can say what he can say.
Well, and I've had, you know, a lot of reflection on this, because I'm obviously the moderator of Stocks and Jacks, and I have a, shall we say, a diverse group of people, right?
That's the beautiful thing about it, Tom, is you do have a diverse group of voices here.
But I figure my job is to drag the knowledge out of every person, because they have more knowledge than even they think they know. And if I do the job right, I get more out of them than maybe they don't even realize they had, you know?
Yeah, it probably helps you.
I've been
asked why you do the show, and I go, well, he's probably searching for like a diverse group of viewpoints to help him inform his investing decisions.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I came up with.
But I mean, I one of the perfect examples, one of our newest contributors is my buddy Mike Murphy. I mean, for a couple of years, he told me I have nothing to contribute. For God's sake, the guy's got all kinds of stuff to contribute.
Yeah, you know, those are my favorite kind of people.
Yeah.
Right? That's kind of how I think about the world. I think, well, if I can do it, then anybody can do it. If I can do this model, then why am I teaching it, right?
Well, look at the individuals we have. But I guess some of the issues that you bring up, I mean, Carl's point is, it's at some point when people continue to abuse the laws and that somehow or another this enforcement has gotten to such a point where if you never enforce something, all of a sudden you do, it's no longer a war, it's a law, it's a weapon. And you know, you can't disagree. And some of this stuff, I mean, I'm not about to hang anybody in the local square, but someplace, somewhere, there needs to be, and you know, I keep changing subjects like a moron here, but Britain has their government, as much as they can be kind of squirrely with people going in and out all the time, they have a much, some of the stuff I'm really jealous about, they seem to have more of a introspective view of what they've done than we do here. People here make mistakes, we just gloss over it. I read bits and pieces of it because I think it was freaking long. They commissioned a review of essentially the Iraq War, and they talked about how they were involved with the U.S. and what they did and blah blah blah. The thing was a scathing indictment of their participation in the war and what they should have looked at, what they didn't, and why they got involved and who they listened to and they shouldn't have. And most of it had to do with a lot of us was us.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there reading this thing, and they talked about they couldn't even get Rumsfeld and his gang, Cheney, to focus on who was going to govern Iraq when we were done, because all they were worried about was who was going to get the oil.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there going, we don't do anything like that. People are killed, they're maimed, they're running down a bike path with artificial legs, and yet people sent them there that should never have been sent there.
Well, everything's
fine here. It's, as long as you got enough money, everything's fine.
Well, I think it goes back to what we were talking about earlier. I don't think you're going off topic here. I think you're on topic. It goes back to this idea that these people that work for government, you know, they don't need a union. it's almost impossible to fire them.
Yeah.
If you try to fire them, then, you know, it's a political thing, right? And you can't do that. So you have this incredible moral hazard that is just compounded atop of a compounding in the federal bureaucracies. And so when a guy is almost assassinated in Pennsylvania a couple weeks ago, 2 weeks later, you don't even see it on the news.
Yeah.
You don't see anything.
Well, the news kind of died because the guy died.
Yeah. And you don't see any more. You're not really seeing the Secret Service or the FBI having to answer to Congress. They're just moving past it.
Well, Congress has their day in the sun where they abuse the lady, but they don't do that because they really care about her job.
They do it so they can
be on TV. Anyway, S&P futures up. Now we're up 30. And S&P futures up 160. These numbers must be out. We'll have them right when we come back from break.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some may be embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, North Bay Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe, Ricardo on the board. S&P futures up 32, NASDAQ futures up 165. The PPI number came out. Ex-food and energy, unchanged versus plus 2.2% was estimated. And the real number was, or the whole number is 0.1 versus 0.2 estimated. So everybody's cheering this number. I went to the PPI page. And again, I don't have time to go through this. Final demand for 0.1% in July. Goods increase 0.6%, services decline 0.2%. We're going to ask Hal to take a look at that. Boy, that's a goods increase 0.6 and services actually decline. Man, I don't know about that one. We'll just do this quick here because a lot of the stuff on this other page hasn't refreshed yet. But we've got the Dow is up. Let's go to the pre-market here. The Dow's up 55. Home Depot. At earnings, they are actually down. They're down. Well, they were down 7. Now they're up 5. So I don't know how this flipped Home Depot $11, but it did. It was trading 368 or 338. Now it's 351. So it just made a flip there. Over in Europe, DAX is up 24. These guys were almost flat a while ago, but now the DAX is up 24. 0.1%. The FTSE is unchanged, up 1. Kekron's down 13.2%. So nothing going on over there. Asia, huge rally in Nikkei, up 1,200 points, 3.5%. These guys have been so volatile. 36,232, Hang Seng up 62, over 17,000, 17,174. Shanghai is up 9.3%, 2,867. Yesterday, a snoozer, Dow was down 140, S&P up 23 cents, NASDAQ up 35. Bonds, down 2 basis points, 3.89. The Bund down 2 basis points, 2.20. We've got oil. Is down 25 cents, 79.81. Had a big up day yesterday. It was up 3% yesterday. Brent down 39 cents, 81.91. Natural gas up a penny, 220. We've got gold up a buck, 25.05, but over 2,500. That's a lot. This is a war kind of move yesterday in both oil and in gold. Silver down 20 cents, 27.80. Copper down 2 cents, 403. Haven't heard much this morning about what's going on in the Middle East, but there was a lot yesterday. Bitcoin down 28 bucks. So at 59,059, and the foreign exchange unchanged against the euro, 109.4. The pound, unchanged there, 128. And the Japanese yen is at 147.
So 163 to 143 back to 147. Air Force Traffic Weather Sports.
Morning, Chief. 7:39 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. We're looking at 65 degrees right now with a high of 81. Partly sunny and pleasant. Tonight will be mainly clear with a low of 69 degrees. Over to Phoenix, Arizona, 90 degrees right now with a high of 107. Partly sunny and very warm. Tonight mainly clear with a low of 87 degrees. Out of traffic in Chicago, Iman Kennedy from Monroe's 34 minutes. We're looking at 50 minutes. Iman Edens from Lane Cook. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 33 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 22 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 31 minutes. Sports, yesterday the Cubs lose to the Guardians 8-9, but the White Sox beat the Yankees 2-2, and the Diamondbacks beat the Rockies 5-4. Today we got back-to-back games. Cubs play the Guardians at 5:40 p.m., White Sox play the Yankees at 7:10 p.m., and the Diamondbacks play the Rockies at 8:40 p.m. Back over to you, Chief.
What do you make of this number? How can the how can you be down up 0.6% on the goods and the service? I haven't seen any service go down, have you? I mean, I'm just saying.
So that's month over month, right? From June to July.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's, what, about 7% annually?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, at the same time, 40% of Americans are really having a difficult time paying their bills.
Yeah.
Which is up from the 30% it was when inflation was at its worst. So I think what's going on here is this inflation. They keep talking about how the inflation is coming down, but that doesn't mean prices are coming down. That means prices are still going up. They're just going up at a slower rate. And if your wages are, if your wages adjusted for inflation are constant as these prices continue to rise, more and more people are getting squeezed. And I think more and more people are getting squeezed. That means they have to tap debt in the form of a credit card, which they're probably paying 20% on. So now they're getting really squeezed. And as they get more and more squeezed and they're using more and more credit card space, that space gets smaller and smaller and smaller until they're tapped out. And I think we're getting to the point where the consumer is about ready to tap out. So if services actually fell by 0.7% month over month.
No, they're down 0.2, goods are up. More of the economy is service than goods. Believe it or not.
Services were down 0.7, right?
0.2, and goods were up 0.6. But since services part is bigger, it equals out to like 0.1 to the upside. Actually, we have somebody's messaged in here. Let me interrupt for a second about how do you have without energy and food? It's real easy. I mean, they call this final demand. All right, here's a chart. Final demand goods. They'll go through and then the first category is final. Demand food, finished consumer foods, crude, finished consumer goods, processed. Then there's government purchased food, foods for export. That's the first category. The next one is final demand energy. It's different than the consumer. It's weird. Finished consumer energy goods, meaning gasoline and so forth, government purchased energy and energy for export. So those are the two. Then the next one is final demand goods less foods and energy. So there's a food and energy part of the wholesale numbers as well, correct? So they just pull that out as well. Now, what services we're talking about, they'll say final demand services, trade of finished goods, trade of personal consumption goods, trade of private capital equipment. Evidently, I don't know what they call that in services, but this is a transportation of government passages, transportation of private passengers, transportation of passengers. What is this one? Transportation of passengers for export. Is that if they export you to hell? That's a category? They throw you on a plane and drop you off in Czechoslovakia or someplace?
Maybe that's the EU or the new Prime Minister of Great Britain, not liking my speech.
Yeah, I like this.
They put me on a vacation to Gitmo or something.
Transportation of passengers for export. How the hell would that even mean?
I don't even want to know what that is, man.
I don't either. There's transportation of private passengers. I guess that means you and I getting on a plane, bus, or train, or taxi, right?
Going to Jamaica?
Yeah, or someplace. Transportation of government passengers. All right. I guess that's Air Force One. I don't know. Transportation of passengers for export. I would never even... You're right. I don't want to know what that one is. Who gets in that category? those are people, they get them overseas, they cancel their ticket home, or what?
That's Elon Musk being sent to Mars without...
anyway, some of this, you read these things and it's like, what are they even talking about?
Anyway, I think with services being down 0.2% year over year,
I think it's month over month, isn't it?
Month over month. I think what's going on is, you know, the wants have gotten so expensive that people aren't buying the wants, and maybe a lot of the wants are services, maybe. Maybe the services are being driven under the table. I know this from just observing New York City. There is a lot of services that are under the table here in New York City. When I have a plumber or a chimney guy tell my mother-in-law, we'll be paying cash, we won't charge you tax. You know, there's a lot. It's going on a lot in New York City. So I think as margins get squeezed more and more, perhaps a lot of those transactions are being handled with cash under the table. So that's maybe a way you can get around. I think it's hard to do that with goods. So you got the squeeze on the consumer. The consumer's getting squeezed by the inflation. They're getting squeezed by their credit card being filled up. They're getting to the point where they're not going to have any more credit. They got to cut back on these services. They got to cut back on their wants, and they're having a hard time buying their needs. So you have demand in luxuries and whatnot decreasing. And I think it's just going to get tighter and tighter and tighter because, you know, the inflation's not going away. And if the Fed, and I don't think the Fed was ever restrictive. I think they just had interest rates artificially high. I think they were still probably buying securities on net.
Loans
still rising.
They were. Let me get the M2 page up there. M2 is increasing.
I'm going to say
there was a time there. You know when they were
but
doing
it. It did come down, but it came down during a time where it had exploded by 40% in about 18. So there was this bubble of cash there, and it's never returned to the pre-pandemic trend.
Oh no!
So the Fed really has never stopped inflating. It might have looked at like it. If you were to take look at a Monet from a long distance, the Fed never stopped inflating. But if you get really close to that Monet painting, you're gonna go, oh, that's a bunch of dots. You can get close enough to that M2 graph, and you can say, oh, the Fed stopped inflating. But you take it further. You step back and you look at it, they did not stop inflating. I think that's why consumer loans, total lending has continued to rise. It hasn't collapsed like it has in past recessions. So I think the Fed is still inflating. And if it raises interest rates, I think we're up for a really, really nasty correction, a recession. If it lowers interest rates, I think it's going to reignite inflation because it's going to make credit even more inexpensive. And people are going to they're going to acquire a bunch of debt to buy the things that they've been putting off.
I'm not going to disagree with any of that. I'm looking at the M2 chart here, and I'm going to say that after March of 2022, the Fed did start to drop money supply a little bit when they claimed they were going to go after the inflation. From March 2022, we topped out at 21, maybe April 2022, we topped out at $21.722 trillion, all right, and we made it down to, where are we here? April of 2023, down to $20.744 trillion. So that's essentially $1 trillion down, all right.
Yeah, to remember though, the effects of monetary policy are lagging, right?
You
have all that money being printed and pushed into the economy, right? It's still inflationary, and it never fell below that pre-pandemic trend.
Well, I'll ask you a very specific question then, Professor. And then I'll get back on this part here because I think it has more to do, Hal, not with what they do, but what everybody expects them to do. The day that the Silicon Valley Bank looked like it was going to go under, they immediately poured money back into the system and basically ate up a lot of what they had drained out. So since April of 2023, $20.744 trillion to today, We're up $400 billion. So since April of 23, the idea that they're pulling back on this is it's not going up very fast, but it's not going down. They're not fighting it at all. No. But my question, I guess, and this is one,
I think a lot of the reason why the M2 growth has been muted, right? we're not really observing what it would have been in the absence of interest on reserves. If there were no interest on reserves, what do you think M2 would look like? If the Fed wasn't paying banks to hold their excess cash in the Federal Reserve System, what do you think M2 would look like today? So they created a bunch of money, but they used interest on reserves to keep that newly printed money kind of dammed up. And it leaks out to whom? Who does it leak out to? It leaks out to the top 1%ers, and that's why their assets, that's why their cash and checking accounts are through the roof. I mean, that trend line on cash and checking accounts to the top 1% in America was a rocket trajectory to the moon.
Oh, yeah.
And they stopped publishing it in August of 2022. Why? Because it probably looks even worse. So this money that they trap in the banking system is probably still leaking out to this top 1%. And they're benefiting from it massively, in my opinion, which is why they don't publish that series anymore.
What would you say if we dragged them out of their graves and threw some life into them? If you put Milton Friedman and the gang together, the old classic monetarists, and they've been around. Some of them were from the Austrian school, like you are, and they weren't just those guys who were monetarists. I mean, monetary theory has been around for a long time, but I'm going to say one of the most sacred answers to any test was if there's a change in monetary policy, meaning, you know, the interest rates were 3.5 and you went to 3.75 or you went to 3.25, that I think was, or 3 or 4 or to down, that was your definition, okay, of monetary policy. And the number was 6 months to 9 months to maybe a year to work its way through the system. And then it was all done, okay? Well, now, but if you take where we went here with the COVID, February of 2020, $15 trillion to April of 2022, so we're talking about 26 months, $21.7 trillion, that's got to be 39%, 40%.
Yeah.
I don't have any idea how long that would take. And what you're saying right now, even though you probably know you're saying it, you're saying it's not done yet, that the number in there was so high that it's still percolating. It's not like,
I think it's still percolating.
We raised it, you know, $100 billion and watched to see where it went. We're talking about it's still percolating. And I mean, a solution to get back to the norm would be, let's start draining some of this out of here. Okay, now, these guys, like I mentioned with Kenny, these guys don't want NVIDIA trading 70, even though that's maybe where it ought to, but even though we're, historically, it might have traded, given their PE and given their growth. Same thing with Microsoft. The stuff is incredibly overvalued because of, we've essentially taken a 40% hit. How can I say it even more directly? The market's not up 40%. The value of the dollar that we're valuing the market with is down 40%.
And yeah, the Fed created that bubble.
Yeah.
Another bubble. That's all it is.
But it isn't the bubble. It's the flip side of the dollar being worth 40% less.
Yeah.
And you know what? Nobody wants to hear that. What do you mean?
Nobody does.
No. Microsoft's up because I invested in it. I'm a genius, and it's a great company. Well, yeah. It is up. You might be a genius. And, oh, by the way, it is a great company. All that's true.
If you discover that the Fed creates the business cycle and you're 22 years old and we just come out of a recession, you graduate from college and you put all your money into the stock market and then you sell it right before the Fed starts withdrawing stimulus, everybody's going to call you a genius.
Yeah.
But well, in fact, you're just acknowledging, whether you know it or not, that Austrian business cycle, I think, in my opinion, is correct. The Fed creates the business cycle. And we know that because people say what? When the Fed is being easy, people say it out loud. Don't fight the Fed. The Fed is creating the business cycle.
Well, right? you don't fight it. But here's, I'll lab a, you know, a personal, I'll say 25-year weakness out on the listeners. If you would have told me in 2020 that for the next 24 years we're going to increase the money supply by an average of 7.3%, and oh, by the way, the growth is going to be 2%, if that, I would have said, you got to get by every building you can, not a downtown office building, maybe in Chicago, buy everything you can and buy every stock you can that isn't going to go belly up, whatever that means. You got to buy an index. But the reason why, after a couple of years of that, I could never do that, Hal, is because I always thought there would be somebody that's saying, what are you idiots doing? All you're doing is inflating the world. And we'd have another Volcker. We'd have somebody recognize it was happening. And somehow or another, it just wouldn't go on for 25 years. But it has. And it's gotten worse. Because it feels so good for people who own baseball teams and football teams and stuff. What do you mean? It's only worth $5 billion. I bought it at $3 billion 6 months ago. It should be going up more than that, right? I mean, we've put such a discontinuity on everything. And now we have some people who have assets that's going up by 40% a year, and people got their money in a bank making 0.5%. If you would have said in 1995,
actually not 0.5%, probably negative 3%.
Yeah, probably. Well, you're probably paying fees. If you would have said in 19
well, inflation too.
88 or 1995 or 2002 that this would be a long term policy and government could get away with it, they'd put you in a straitjacket if they still have those things.
I think they would. Yeah. We were told that monetizing the debt was inflationary until the Fed decided to monetize the debt, and they called it quantitative easing, right?
But you know what? We never figured. And when I say we, guys like me, if you did that, what's the game? How do you get spanked for it? If the U.S. did that, or the Brits did that, or then there was no euro, if the Swiss did it or the Germans did it, if you did that, you would say, okay, we're going to pour money into the system. All that's going to happen is your currency is going to drop like a rock compared to other people's currencies. So you could never get away with it. Yet now, in the last, certainly since COVID, the coordination, all the central bankers that mean something get together and say, we're all going to do it. We're going to float.
Yeah, it's like a
different world.
It's like an orchestra.
Yeah.
And the question I want to know is that Bugs Bunny in the white glove running the orchestra?
But, you know,
Bugs Bunny conducting this orchestra?
But everybody, you think of it as, oh, hell, is a professor and is, you know, me, you know, just wanting to do a show with bright people. You can't not understand how strong the voices are for the people that benefit by this. I was reading, I went back over to the history of the Weimar Republic a couple of weeks ago. I had nothing better to do. Imagine that, nothing better to do. When that first started, when they started pouring money into the system, they did that to basically screw France and England because of the reparations payments. They were going to say, okay,
the Treaty of Versailles war reparations.
Yeah, you want a million marks a month? Here you go. Here's a million marks. How many more you want? You know, we want a trillion. These are how much money we printed yesterday. That's essentially what they did. Well, in the first 6 months of that, you know who was the greatest proponent of the policy? You think for a second, you'll know.
Well, the landlord class.
All they did was they paid off their mortgages in 6 months.
Exactly, yeah, exactly.
All of a sudden, wait, I got all this money for my dairy. Hey, what was my mortgage?
Rent payment in month 12 paid off the principal.
Yeah, all of a sudden I owe you 100,000 marks. It's supposed to take me 30 years. By the way, here's 100,000 marks. How many more you want?
You know, 12 months later, they're collecting a rent.
Yeah.
That would have paid off 10 of their mortgages.
Yes, and so some of what the governments are doing now has to be that. What do you suppose? You know, I haven't heard boo because, man, I really should subscribe like the London Times or someplace. What do you suppose? I mean, it's been a few years. The balance sheet of the euro, was it the euro bank where all those guys are? What do you suppose their balance sheet looks like when they bought these bonds at zero interest and now they're paying 2.5 or 3? Yeah. They must have paid what? See, if in order to get a zero interest rate, if a bond's paying 3%, and in 30 years, you probably, we'll say 10 years, you probably got to pay what? 120 for the bond where all the sum of all the interest and the money at the end don't equal what you pay for it, right? That's what it means by zero interest, negative interest. That thing has to be trading, what, 80 now? 75? And they paid what? 125 for it? What does that balance sheet look like?
Yeah. It'd be interesting to find out.
Oh, God. Well, that's what happened to Silicon Valley Bank, right?
Yeah.
They bought all these 10-year bonds at, what, 1.5%. So they
difference between Silicon Valley Bank and the European Union Bank and the Federal Reserve is that those organizations can lend themselves money. They can print it into existence.
Well, they also don't have to. They don't have to mark it down on their balance sheet. I mean, if Hal Snar, and one of these days, I mean, if you're a client at PTI and you say, "Hey, go out and buy me a 10-year Treasury," and so they're going to come out at $1,000 a pop. Well, say the rates are the rates today on a 10-year is, or say 3.88. Say 3.9. Let's say it's 4%. Is the coupon. All right, and now the market rate is 3.9, right? There's going to be a premium to that bond, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Because the bond's going to pay 4, and the market rate's 3.9, so you got to pay a little more than the $1,000 to equate the 4% to the 3.9, correct?
Yeah.
Right. So Hal's going to come in and spend, and he's going to say, "I'll pay $1,010 for that bond." And all of a sudden now, the rates, 10-year rates go to, say, 10, that bond's going to be trading for 65 or 70, right? So in Hal's account here at PTI, he had $100,000 or $101,000 he put in to pay for those things, and they're now trading for $75,000. Well, Hal's down 26. Now, when he gets his PTI sheets or Fidelity or whoever the hell it happens to be, notice how I put PTI and Fidelity in the same line. It's gonna say Hal's down 26 grand, right? Now, if you hang in there for 10 years, you're gonna end up getting your money, correct? But right now, you're down 26 grand. Well, if you're a bank, you don't have to say you're down 26 grand. You can take the long term approach and say in 10 years it's gonna be worth, which is terrific if you don't ever have to sell it, right? But they ignore it. They actually think they're still up or still unchanged. They're not. That's what happened to Silicon Valley Bank, right?
Yeah.
So what do you suppose the European Union balance sheet looks like if they had to sell that crap?
Yeah.
Good Lord.
It must be nice to have the ability to just ignore those kinds of things. And
I'm going to say
put money to cover it.
I'm going to say, Hal, if we had a printing press here that could pop out Benjamin's, you'd come visit a couple times a year for a beer.
would you export me?
I'd say even a guy like you who likes to squeeze a buck a little bit, if I ran you off 40 Benjamins, you might even be a buyer downstairs in the bar. for two beers.
You had to fly me on those government flights that export people.
Yeah, the export people. We're going to be talking about this for 2 months. Export people. No, I have a feeling you'd pick up the tab downstairs if I just ran you off 50 Benjamins.
Oh, you know, when I have money, I'm not a cheap guy. I'm just frugal. And the people I hang out with, we all reach for the bill.
Oh, yeah.
The people I don't hang out with are the ones that, you know, say, "I got to go to the bathroom."
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Well, you remember Jackie Gleason? When I had it, you could have it. What were the three lines when he won the money? It was, "I had it, I went with it," or something like that. If you wanted it, you could. Yeah, it was on the Honeymooners.
Okay.
Is there any jokes that weren't on those old shows? I mean, pretty much. So, what do you make of? We have one time for one more question. Market's up here on this number. Tomorrow we got the CPI. What do you think? Is it going to be a good number? Is it already leaked? Are we going to make sure it's good before the election? I mean,
I think it's probably going to be a number that makes Wall Street smile. And I think it's going to, I mean, we're getting close to the election. So I think it's going to be a number that makes the investors smile. Let's just say that.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I
don't think it's going to be bad news. You can't have any more bad news.
No, we don't want any more bad news. Anyway, S&P Futures up 31, NASDAQ Futures up 169. Are you moving to Carolina, or are you still debating?
Still kind of waiting. We're kind of on a holding pattern here.
Why don't you just get a good job at Columbia or Fordham or someplace?
I don't think I've been in New York for 2 years, and I don't think my economics mesh with people from New York City. Let's just say that.
Ah.
Yeah.
You know, the weird part, when I was at Notre Dame, they welcomed that. I don't think they
really
do anymore.
Yeah, it's not really all that welcome anymore. You know, I think people want protection in a herd, and having somebody outside that herd challenging people, raising questions, asking questions. I mean, I enjoy answering questions. And I think when you have somebody outside the herd, it makes people uncomfortable. And so they want, there's this need for protection of the herd. And I think that's what happens in a lot of departments.
Well, let's just say that Father Hesburgh's view of a university is a lot different than people have today. And his...
Oh, I think, yeah. And I would side with John Stuart Mill, right? You have to have these uncomfortable conversations. There's no way to exchange wrongly informed opinions for truth if you're not having the kinds of conversations we have.
You never learn anything from anybody who thinks the same way you do about everything.
No, you don't. Yeah, you in fact, it kind of creates a moral hazard in your thinking, right?
Well, that's what we're seeing in government today. Look at the channels people watch.
I mean, you look at the Fox News Republicans, and you look at the Democrats and the other media.
See,
they just kind of silo themselves, and they don't. Really
by the way, grow. The right wingers are way past you. They're at Newsmax, not at Fox anymore.
Oh, they're not on Fox anymore. Yeah.
Well, you got to go to Newsmax if you're really into it.
Yeah,
but they can't go 10 words without some slam against somebody on the other side.
Yeah, these people just get siloed, and you can't grow when you're siloed like that.
Well, when I started Stacks and Jacks, Dr. J told me, Chief, remember, people will only pay for affirmation. They'll never pay for information.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Anyway, take care of yourself. Talk at you next week. SP Fuse up 32. NASDAQ Fuse up 170. Pretty good PPI number, although if you dig into it, it's not as good. But it was pretty good. We'll see you tomorrow. CPI back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.